Special guest
Eva Houston.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of the Power Motion Picnic Hour, a very special post Boston Marathon week Power Motion Picnic Hour. How are you doing, Trevor?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. I was a little bit thrown off there.
I changed up the intro.
I like it. I'm sort of running out of new ways to just say my name simply. Just say Trevor.
Yeah, but I think people were going to miss that, so I'm glad you just did it. And I'm Dave. I'm your other host. Usually I say not my name first, but we're trying whatever. We're just doing what feels good.
Our most roundabout intro yet, but it does feel good. And it feels particularly good after what was a great chat with a new special guest.
I love talking to Eva. That was so cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when I had prompted the question, which is something I usually try not to do, ask special guests about their experience with like other sort of like, you know, famous athletes and stuff. Yeah. 'Cause you know, I want the interview to be about them, of course.
They're the special guest this week, at least.
They're the special guest, but, yeah. Was curious what it, you know, she, 'cause she does, you know, she's on the same team as people like Tatiana McFadden and yep. just like some of the legends of the sport. And it got me thinking about sort of, do you remember that David Bowie, like back early 2000s watching Arcade Fire was like watching a young version of me. And I don't know if it exactly played out that way for Win Butler, but.
Is that what he said? I remember that video of David Bowie playing with Arcade Fire, playing the song Wake Up, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I particularly remember that because that's the first YouTube video I ever saw.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, this is cool. I'm like, what is this wonderful website? and that was a really great moment. Great website.
Great moment. Great website. Great musicians. But yeah, anyway, so it'll be really cool to follow Eva and sort of see where her journey takes her. Already a Paralympic athlete, four-time Boston finisher, and still a lot of racing and running ahead. So
yeah,
can't wait to see where she goes.
Already very successful at a young age and just added special guest on the Power Motion Picnic Hour to an impressive resume. And so maybe we should just go to that interview right now so we can stop referencing it and making people guess what happened.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
My name's Eva Houston. I am on the US Paralympic track and field team. And I competed in the 2021 Tokyo Paralympic Games.
That's awesome. We have some pretty accomplished special guests, but that's definitely up there. And you also just competed in the Boston Marathon.
I did. Yep, that was Monday. I was in Boston for about 30 hours. That was it. So
that's enough.
I'm pretty beat up right now. Not gonna lie.
What was your time? You were 2 hours and...
2 hours and 16 minutes, which was a Boston PR for me. So I was very happy, very happy with the trip.
That's awesome. Congratulations. That's super fast.
Thank you.
How many times have you done Boston now?
This would be my fourth time. Wow. Definitely my favorite course. The energy is just so fun. You guys were there, right?
I was there with my family, my wife, who we call the unaffiliated member of the Power Motion Picnic Hour that lives with me, as well as my two young apprentices, my two boys. And we were cheering for you at Natick. We were outside the Natick fire station and we said, go Eva. But you were like cranking
up my name.
You were cranking up the hill. It was like a fun spot to watch because it was like a pretty serious hill, but yeah, you guys were flying. It was really impressive.
It's such a fun race.
That sounds like no time to look at the crowd. It's time to stay focused on the pumping up the hill. Yeah.
Avoid hitting the power up signs that people like to hold on the sidelines.
Totally.
So one question, how do you, because in Paralympics, you are typically doing shorter distance, right? Those are like, what are your specialties for sort of like Olympic running?
So in the Paralympics, we are classified based on our disability. So I have cerebral palsy, so that makes me a T34. And they only offer the 100 meter and the 800 meter for the Paralympic Games, which is kind of a strange distance to train for, you know, the one and the eight.
Mm-hmm.
But I do marathons to train for the 800. So, I do the 100, 800, I'll do the half. I've run a couple of 10Ks. So anywhere where I can, like, just go out and have some fun, I try to sign up.
That's awesome. I watched your 800 meter bronze finish from 2023. That was the world championship?
Yeah, this past summer in Paris.
That looked like an awesome race. And actually, my only complaint as a viewer was that, like, it seemed like the real intense part of the race was for third place, and you couldn't see as much of that as you could the lead, you know?
Yeah, my parents were upset with that. I think, that was my first race of really being close to people's times. When I competed in Tokyo, I was a pretty inexperienced athlete and was just, like, happy to be there, to be honest with you. But with this race, I, like, knew that third place would be up for grabs.
Yeah.
And there's a moment when I kind of got cut off at the beginning. You kind of see that in the clip.
Yeah.
But I had to pull back because I got cut off. And then I was stuck. And in wheelchair racing, we call it getting boxed in, where you have one person in front of you, one person behind you, and then one person to your right And I was kind of stuck in that position for a second. And that was really scary, but I found a way out. And yeah, it was a really, really fun race.
That's awesome. I wish I could see video of the way you found out. Cause yeah, there's a couple of moments where they show, it's like, there is a bit of a pack back there, and there's a couple times where you see a little bit of what's going on. And then other times, because I was specifically like your parents, but I focused on, because I knew the outcome. So I was focused on third place. But you put your eyes to the leaderboard and you can see who's where, you know?
Yeah. Definitely stressful in the moment, but worked out.
Yeah, I know. Okay.
I noticed like some, you know, getting boxed in sounds crazy, first of all, but I noticed even on Boston, like in some cases, one person is like sort of like drafting right behind, like so much so that the front wheel is almost like in between the person in front of them, like in between their wheels, which is just crazy. Like it gets really close.
Yeah, it's definitely a skill to draft that close. I train at the University of Illinois, and when we're on the track, we do train, you know, in the draft. I'm not fast enough to be in the fast pack, but someday. Like, it is really, really important to practice drafting, because if you get too close to one of the wheels, like, there's a chance of your wheel getting stuck and you could flip, or like if the person, especially in the marathon where people are dodging potholes, you really have to keep a close eye on the draft, just because if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, you guys are going down, you know? So.
Right. And how do you train for marathon when, because most of the time in practice, you're on a track, right? Which is, or maybe not. Well, I guess, how do you sort of get the reps in to like approximate like the Boston course?
Yeah, we do. We are on the road pretty much all year round. But pre-Boston, we are only on the road.
Wow.
But my coach kind of has us trained for a marathon at any time. So some people do the Grandma's Marathon in the summer. And even though we are on the track 5 days a week, we still grab a road day on Saturdays. So that we're always kind of ready. But, you know, Champaign doesn't have too many hills. So we have like two or three hills that we know of, and we'll just like, you know, create a course that hits all of them.
Yeah. That's what one of our special guests, Christina Folsick, who's a runner typically runs in New Hampshire, and she moved to Arizona and was like, well, the hills, you know, aren't, the mountains aren't quite as big, but you can just sort of go up and down them, you know,
definitely.
In that case. And University of Illinois is like, I know. So my 8-year-old son, the young apprentice, is also a full-time wheelchair user. And so we've gotten into sort of like the adaptive sports community, and, so many of his coaches, his basketball coach, his first running coach, all like went to University of Illinois and like played sports there on scholarships. It seems like the university is like really cool for that.
Yeah, they were. I know that Illinois was one of the first universities to have a wheelchair basketball team. We've had the track team for a while, and we were the only track team for a super long time. Now there's a wheelchair track team in Arizona, the University of Arizona. I don't think it's Tempe. I'm not sure which Arizona school. And then rumor has it there's a new one building in Alabama. So yeah, it's really good for the sport. You know, we can't take everybody. So it's just good for the sport to have options.
Yeah, and I like Roll Tide takes on new meaning with when you were cheering on a wheelchair race.
That's right.
Totally.
Nice double entendre. Yeah.
Exactly.
And actually, on that note, could I ask you a question about sort of language? So like with my son, like pretty early on, we decided like the terms like walking and running would just like own those, right? It's just like, okay, like it just means different speeds, right? But like there's some sensitivity, I think, in the community around like, yeah, using an appropriate word like rolling or something like that. Like what's your take?
I definitely say walking and running too. Like if I go for a walk in the neighborhood, I find it odd to say like, I'm going for a push. My dad will say that because he's a goofball. But I find that like, I also say run. Or like I'm racing. Even though, you know, I don't know, but I think that running feels the most natural. I know I remember hearing an interview with Tatiana McFadden, and she said the same thing where it's like, I like own that word, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's fine. I know I agree with you. Like some people do feel sensitive to those words, but I don't have a problem with them. So
that's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I guess it's a personal perspective, right? Different people feel differently, but like, but yeah, that's cool. I mean, we on even sort of like a lot of our podcast is about celebrating like all types of running, right? You know, distances, styles, like a lot of the running, what I call running is like to an outsider might look like walking, let's say, you know, sort of on like long runs through the mountains. Like, you know, it's not like I'm sprinting up, you know, hills or anything like that. You know, the pro runners are maybe, but certainly not me. But you know, it's all running, right?
And we
always see that last like clip that they always put out of the last person crossing the finish line from whatever marathon. You know what I mean?
They're probably not
putting in the fastest splits, but it's still a pretty awesome accomplishment, an awesome experience for them. And then even the people cheering that on are excited. So
they ran the marathon.
I mean, it's pretty cool.
definitely.
And I was just gonna say, Dave just finished the LA marathon, his second marathon. Oh. I have not run a marathon.
What was that?
What month was the LA marathon?
It was March. This year it was St. Patrick's Day.
It was early.
I recommend it if you're looking to switch things up. It was like, I think there was 25,000 participants total. I think it was a good size. The last one I had done, which was my first one, was Providence, Rhode Island, which was nice, but very small event. But LA was great. And this time, speaking of hills and hill training, I properly trained for hills, which I didn't do my first time around.
Ask what's the terrain like?
I think it's like decently hilly, but like honestly, I mostly trained running in Central Park, which is really hilly.
Yeah.
I live in Manhattan.
Hilly.
Yeah. So I trained so much running full laps. You know, there's a 6.2 mile lap. I did like loop, and I did tons of laps of that. And so honestly, I felt fine once I hit hills in the marathon.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, Central Park my first time that loop, I was like, I can't race tomorrow.
Oh yeah. And like,
it's a big loop.
It's a big loop, and it's like parts of it seem whatever, like little hills, but then you get to the northern part, and then there's this long, when you get to the very top of the hill, there's this long gradual downhill, but then the uphill portion of that is way less gradual.
The downhills are scary. My first time going down them.
Yeah.
You know, you're turning down a hill. I was like, oh my gosh, if this is just one part of the park, I'm going to die in the half marathon.
Oh yeah, you know, I didn't think about that. And at the top, the northern part of the park, that what I called like a gradual downhill, it has a really sharp turn about halfway down it.
Yeah. I mean, anybody who just watched Boston, Marcel in the men's division, right? Marcel Hughes like took a spill on a corner just going too fast, right? Because some of the corners are like 90 degrees, right? They're just a full hard turn.
Yeah, I can't remember like all the miles blend together, but I do remember either 6 miles, 16 or 17, there's a sharp downhill, and then you're like, you have to turn and there's train tracks. So it's like so much going on. But my favorite hill, I don't know what mile this was, but I was really fearful that there was a turn. And then I saw just a straight uphill. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go as fast as I can because I don't have to stop.
Yep.
So that was fun.
That's a nice rare moment when the uphill is you're glad it's there. Oh yeah, but I mean Boston, right, has so many streets with whatever, the trolley tracks and all sorts of old roads. I can imagine there's all sorts of unexpected things popping up.
Definitely. Yeah. Got to break their tire.
even like, so my son, we do adaptive sports New England, and they will get different tracks to sort of like do practice at. And some of them even just like, oh, in lane three, like on the straight, like the second straight, there's like just a little like divot, right? And like, you even have to watch out for stuff like that, it seems like.
Yeah.
And that's on like a prepared flat surface meant for just like running, right? Like going through 26 miles through Massachusetts, where, mind you, not all the roads are particularly well maintained, like especially after like, you know, frost heaves in winter and stuff. Like, it's just crazy. Definitely.
Yeah, they do a remarkable job. But even then, yeah, like just really, you can't avoid it. But
like, do they do actual, like, actually that as I was saying it, I was like, oh, I wonder if they take better care of the marathon route, like just out of
like courtesy. A road right next to it is neglected, but the marathon route is they do okay on it.
They do okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, we'll have somebody fact check that for us, but
we'll reach out to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. So Eva, we did have one. So we have a part of the show called Listener Mailbag, where people send in questions, and it's rare. I think you might be the first special guest to have a question sent in advance.
Usually the questions come after people have heard the interview. Yeah.
Yeah. But we had an insider write in just before the show, who was very excited I was talking to you, and she was wondering, so she saw a talk the other day about different levels of like inclusion, like from sort of like, you know, able-bodied only type sports, like, you know, typical or whatever you'd want to call it, up through like fully inclusive. And this lecturer sort of like was really negative, had this like progression almost from like not inclusive at all to like exclusive. And then the next level was adaptive. And then from there, it was like peer with like, you know, a buddy or a helper, up to like fully inclusive where everybody's doing the same thing. And I mean, in our experience as parents, that's just like kind of crazy that they would sort of cast a negative light on adaptive sports when like we're just thinking like adaptive sports are so great for our son and there's such like a good avenue, and like people playing wheelchair basketball, their goal is not to like play able-bodied basketball, right? It's just to sort of play basketball with their peers. I'm wondering like what if you've ever thought about that, and what or what you think about that, what your reaction is sort of to that. That was the very sort of thoughtful mailbag question we got, I think.
Interesting. So remind me that it was like
what the language she used was exclusive, and then the next level, just one up from exclusive, was adaptive.
Oh, interesting.
and then like peer with like a buddy program to like up to fully inclusive where everybody's doing the same thing. Hmm. And we kind of just feel like there's a place for all of it, but you don't have to like rank.
I mean, I know there's a discussion about like Paralympics versus Special Olympics, and it's kind of a touchy one, but it is important that there is a distinction, just because there's different needs in each of those groups. So maybe that system is speaking to that, you know, like the different, like how I'm using quotations for listeners, inclusive like a program is based on like who, you know, if anybody can join. But I find that the Adaptive Sports are pretty inclusive, but I do think we have a lot of work to do in the space. I'm thinking of like, I'm just speaking of track and field because that's what I know best, but there are several classes that have less opportunities, like less races. Mm-hmm. Specifically, I'm thinking like T51s, that's like a spinal cord injury, but they often have limited hand function. Their races have been like almost taken away entirely. And since there's only so many slots for the Paralympic Games, how many races you can have, theirs have been taken away. And, you know, other classes have had races added to their opportunity, you know, like what they can race. And that isn't really that inclusive of adaptive sports in that sense, because people with that specific disability can no longer thrive in para athletics. There are sports like rugby, which is a sport that's, you have to be a quad, meaning an impairment in all four limbs, or limited function rather. That sport is designated for quads because there is such a lack of inclusion of people with quads in other Paralympic sports. So I think that there is a lot of work that can be done, but I would disagree with the scale.
I think this listener will be first time listener, by the way. She doesn't typically listen, but she'll definitely listen to this episode. I think she'll be happy with that answer. Not that we were searching for validation. We were more just really interested in your perspective.
Sure.
But you're right. It is very tricky, and there's definitely a difference. I mean, I think you said it really well, and I'll say it less eloquently, but you said something about like, you know, there's different needs, and like different needs sort of want to be doing different things. And like, maybe that's just the right answer. But to the point you made about T51, like, there needs to be like a choice, right? There needs to be something, there needs to be an option.
You almost quoted Karl Marx there, Trevor, I think, which I'm not saying with any judgment as a positive or a negative. I'm just putting it out there before the fact checkers get us in the mailbag about it.
We probably both just pulled it from the ether somewhere.
You and him, same.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Yeah, I like that answer too. That was a tricky question that I had trouble following.
That might have been our toughest question ever to be received by the mailbag.
I know, that was not a softball.
Love it.
Yeah, some of our questions, some of our mailbag is like somebody sends us a video of like the people trying to like run at a marathon pace and they like crash on like the giant like bouncy treadmill. That's like a more typical mailbag entry.
Yeah, that one's easier. It doesn't even really require any kind of logical answer. You can just say sweet. All right, I'm gonna you mentioned your father earlier, and when I was doing some research for this, I think I saw a video of him and you. Were you in the high school marching band?
I was.
I was in the high school marching band, so I liked that.
Awesome. What'd you play?
I played the drums. So cool. So I did first year in high school on quad toms, and then 3 years on the snare.
Oh, very cool. I played drums for a year when I was 10. My
Sweet.
teacher quit, so I had to switch to the trumpet, but that's okay.
Yeah. Trumpet's cool.
Definitely.
Did
Yeah.
you
So I was in the marching band, and my dad, he was, is a very big band nerd. He was in drum
Oh,
corps
nice.
in his 20s and pretty obsessed. So when I came to him, I'm his only kid, so I kind of get what I want.
The
And
system works.
Yes, I came to him and I said, listen, I want to be in the marching band, but I don't want to play on the sidelines. And that's the option that everybody can think of as
Right. Yeah.
a student who uses a wheelchair. Like, that's just what happens. And I said, what if, since you know how to march and I know how to play, you push me in the marching band? And he said yes, which is crazy, meaning that he had to come to every marching band practice 5 days a week. So he like took off work. Like, it was absolutely insane that he said
that's
yes.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a lot of marching to memorize. Yeah.
Yes, the best 4 years. We had so much fun together.
Oh, that's amazing.
Awesome.
That's so cool. Yeah, I loved it when I saw that video. And also I was excited that it gave me a chance to bring up marching band, because I loved my experience, my 4 years in the marching bands, and we never get to bring, they never comes up here. So
sure. Yeah. So fun.
Barely relevant. Although it is, I mean, right. We were talking about our like large net that we cast for what's running. Is marching band running?
Oh, it's a sport. If not running, it's hard work.
We'll call it running.
We'll call it running.
Yeah, we'll put it. It's a category of running. Why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
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 I was training.
I don't think we've excluded anything yet. So like, why would we start now?
It. Yeah. Let's not start now. So, you're also going to Paris this year, correct?
Trials for the Paralympic Games are in Florida this year in July, and that will be trials to see who qualifies for that for the Paralympic Games this summer. So I have a couple months to train for that, but that'll be really fun.
Oh, wow. So you qualify in July, and when are the games?
They're late August, early September.
Wow.
So they really try to get athletes at their, you know, their peak performance, which doesn't really give much time to like mentally get your head around it. But yeah, it's quick.
And so you're going for the 100 and the 800 again?
That's what I'll be trying out for.
Cool.
In July. Yep.
Awesome. And you like, so you've raced against and with at this point some of like the greats, right? You mentioned Tatiana earlier and like Sue Scaroni. Like, we like, tell us what it's like sort of racing alongside like these legends.
So they're not in my classification, so I don't like race against them on the track, but I do train with Susanna every day, and Tatiana, if I don't see her at, I see her at marathons and stuff. She doesn't live in Illinois anymore, but it's such a crazy experience. When I was a freshman at Illinois, I was so scared. I didn't really know that much about racing. I raced in high school, but, you know, I had my dad and some very, very thoughtful coaches helping me learn wheelchair racing. But I came to a place where, you know, Adam Blinkney is the coach and has coached all of these legends. And then I'm racing with, you know, on the track with these people, and I was starstruck. So I didn't really say much the first couple years. But now, like, you know, I know their dog's name and I know their coffee order, and it's no big deal. But it definitely is a little crazy to think about, like what would my 16-year-old self think?
Yeah. Well, the winner of the 800 in 2023, the one you did, I can't remember her name now. She had a really awesome, really British name.
Hannah Cockcroft.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's fast.
She is fast. Yep. Yeah. She's been top of that leaderboard for quite a bit now. T34s. Okay.
And I think, I think they said in that one, I think she said, a world record or a track record or something. She said some kind of record.
She's always setting them. So I like often get them mixed up, but yeah, she's definitely not slowing down.
Wow. And I guess it seemed like it was a bit of a triumph to keep that from being a full British podium, right? Like, I think, I guess, yeah, are they kind of the, they're kind of the favorites, I guess.
I think it was like kind of up in the air. I just don't think that people knew what to expect. Like, I think that was kind of wild card because I hadn't been to, you know, any international races that year besides, you know, besides world championships. So yeah, we were like, how is this going to stack up? Like, we really didn't. Yeah. So yeah, but it did feel good. I was like, okay, we got USA on there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, to see you there at the flag at the finish, that was pretty exciting. I can't even imagine what that feels like.
It was a crazy feeling. I remember not being able to sleep that night. And then I, you know, my parents called like wanting to chat. And I was like, I really can't. Like, I don't know how to talk about what just happened. So I'm going to have to call you later.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. And even as I was like asking about sort of racing alongside these legends, I realized like maybe you're on that path, right? Maybe you're the next, you're the, like the next generation, right? Which is really cool. Like you'll be sort of on the other side of that at some point, potentially.
Oh yeah. Oh, that would be a dream.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Let's see. And so I did have a question too. So I, It looked from your Instagram like you're also sort of an advocate for trans inclusion in sport. And can you talk a little bit about sort of that?
So I joined a running group called Queers, stands for Queer Running Society. and our main goal with that is just to make running an inclusive space. And I think that my partner is non-binary, and we often talk about this all the time, like the similarities of having a disability and being gender non-conforming, how similar our lives growing up were. You know, like bathrooms aren't made for us. Like there's so many similarities where like people don't really know how to speak about transgender issues or disability issues. So we often like kind of just weren't talked to about those things, and you kind of just feel isolated. And that part of you feels invisible. So I definitely wanted to uplift trans and non-binary runners, which is why when I was asked to join that Queer Running Society, I jumped on that. It's still like a group that's in the making, so I'm hoping that some more cool opportunities come from that group. But yeah, for now I'm just like an ambassador, athlete ambassador, and try to show up where I can.
That's awesome.
That's very cool.
And it's cool. I mean, I think for a lot of areas we're at like, you know, a new period of awareness for a lot of things. So it's also cool to see where things are going to go in the next few years, right? Where people are being more intentional and more conscious about things. That's exciting, you know, and
totally,
you know, a lot I've seen, you know, I do all these New York Roadrunners races in New York, and for instance, they have a non-binary category, which is pretty great and fits in perfectly with running.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think like when the initial meetings of Queers, we were kind of talking about like, oh, how cool is it that I think Chicago is the first major marathon to have a non-binary division. I can't remember what year that was. It was recent.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And then it seems like all these other races are being more mindful of that. And I think that it's the same with adaptive sports. Like as soon as one major marathon kind of increases their adaptive podium winning salary, whatever it's called, all the other marathons kind of, you know, take note and they follow. So you just need one person, or you need one group to take the lead, and the rest kind of follow. So it's just important to like kind of get your foot in the door and like be firm, because it leads to all this other great change. So yeah, it's been so great to see.
Yeah. I think with a lot of stuff, like, I mean, a lot of stuff like this in general, it's just, it's not that people are not that people are against it. It's like someone has it and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's a great idea. I never thought about that.
Oh wow, it's easy.
I agree with that. I never even realized this was an issue, but you know, and
right, and
that's why totally. I think having the one person, let's say, who has the idea or makes the change or does the inclusion,
and that's why like visibility and just awareness are so important, right? Because you know, you can't, that's, I mean, I'll say this with some caution, but like, you can't really blame people in a lot of cases for not knowing something that they like didn't know about, right? And
totally.
a lot of it has some systemic sort of underpinning, like, well, people have just been excluded and left sort of out of you know, the line of sight, so you know, that's the problem. But like, but yeah, it's good, like to that point, that when people become aware, it's like, oh well, yeah, let's do this immediately, right? Like, we didn't even know, like,
great idea.
Yeah.
I always welcome questions, you know, like, I have friends ask, like, don't you get tired of like people coming up to you in the airport and asking like, what's the bike? Like, why do you have a bike with you? If I'm tired, yes, it's annoying, but sure. Usually I'm excited to like explain wheelchair racing to one more person in the world. And hopefully they watch the Paralympics, you know, and like, viewer ratings go up. Like, anytime we can just increase the awareness of Paralympic sport is a win, I think. So I will answer anybody's questions about my bike,
no matter how jet lagged you are.
That's
great.
Well, we'll do our best to proliferate this through our, you know, 25 plus person listening community as well. Maybe more.
Who knows? I think it's way more. We'll see. We'll check the analytics afterwards, and we'll issue a correction next week.
Every day it's more. Every day it's more.
We're running low on time, so I did want to ask you, do you know the song Champaign, Illinois by Old 97?
The bottom line's been snorted. The bottom card's been dealt. No one knows like you know right now how truly bad it felt.
I do not.
Well, I recommend it. That's what I think of when I think of Champaign, Illinois. Now, I guess I also think of adaptive sports.
Awesome. I didn't know I'll add it to my playlist, running playlist, maybe.
And maybe follow up and let us know if it works as a running song, because that's something we do. Sometimes we review songs, not for whether they're good songs, but whether they run or not.
Oh, I like that. I like that distinction. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, and if that's what you're using it for, that's more relevant than whether it's a good song or not.
Totally. Yep. Agreed.
And then I did want to say, I appreciate how you pronounce your last name.
Yes. In New York, I'm fine. In New York, I'm fine. Everywhere else, they like correct me, which is okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. They can do what they want. But in New York, I think I can say I speak for all 9 million of us. We appreciate
it. Oh, I love it.
So we are getting low on time. So I guess, do you have any closing thoughts or final things you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Watch the Paralympic Games.
Nice. Yes.
This summer. They happen about 30 days after the Olympics. They're really, really cool. You could watch goal ball, which is for visually impaired athletes. That is the coolest sport I've ever seen. Anytime I see a goal ball athlete, I like interrogate them with questions. Super cool. Highly recommend.
Okay. That sounds great.
That's very, very, very cool. Absolutely. And we'll be rooting you on, as will our listeners. And we'll be sort of like unofficially sponsoring you, which is something we like to
thank
do.
You
sort
so
of claim,
much.
Claim unofficial sponsorships.
We'll be doing just, it. And emotional sponsorship, and then providing more coverage probably than most people, because you've been.
Thank you so much.
For sure.
Yeah. We're happy to make it official. We'll send you a t-shirt.
Yeah.
If you'll have us. Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Thank you so much, Eva. Well, this was so awesome. We really appreciate you taking the time and coming on, and good luck with the qualification and with all the rest of your running.
Thanks for having me. This was a blast.
This is the Power Motion Picnic Hour.
Well, thanks again, Eva, for coming on. That was such a great talk. We had an awesome time talking with you.
That was so great, Eva. Thank you so much. If I'm not mistaken, at the very end, you may have agreed to become our first sponsored athlete. So
so we have to figure out what that means, I guess.
Well, when we spoke with Beatrice, who's Beatrice Hatz, a fellow Paralympic athlete, she had mentioned when she got sponsored by, I think, Nike, she got like a gift basket.
Okay. Maybe we can put something like that together.
Yeah. So we'll collect sort of a mailing address, all that separately. We'll do that off pod, and we'll figure out what the sponsorship pack is, and we'll send it your way, Eva.
Yeah, we'll hammer out the details, but I think any regular listener can rest assured that to know that there will be some Bobos in there.
There'll be some Bobos, likely some stickers, perhaps a bucket hat.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
All the good stuff. All right. Well, I don't know. I mean, it feels like as far as regular business, I mean, we do have some mailbag, but I'm inclined almost to just let it sit there for another week or two.
Yeah, I got one mailbag entry in between our interview and when we just got back on pod to do this opening and closing part, which
another
is
insider.
Yeah, which is the mailbag entry was hurry up and release the next episode or something like that. Or it was like, when's the next episode coming out? So the people want more episodes. We'll try to be a little more regular maybe going forward.
I think so. Well, we do. I mean, not to spoil anything, which is nearly impossible since we scarcely know what we're going to talk about on the next episode.
Yeah.
Let alone the rest of this one. But I know we do have a few really awesome special guests on the horizon, so we're going to keep this going. I'm just feeling great. You know, I feel like I've learned so much from our special guests, and it's been just a pleasure. It's been one of the great joys of being a podcaster, and you know, I'm sort of feeling that vibe again.
Oh, same. Yeah, exactly. I'm falling back in love with podcasting. It's like it's like when you take that, when you run a marathon, in my experience, you know, then for like a month, you're not as excited about running anymore. And then one day you get out there for one of those runs that just feels great. And it's, you know, beautiful out, or as you like it, it's horrible out. But you're out there and you just feel like you can run forever. And you're in that zone. So that's how I feel about podcasting as well. You and I actually saw each other yesterday.
We did, quite randomly, yeah.
IRL, and had what, in place of what would have just been a conversation, we had what felt like a live, unrecorded episode of the Power Motion Picnic Hour, where we just talked about the Boston Marathon.
We did. We talked, and I guess we should cover the Boston Marathon. That's a good sort of, I think race recap has become a favorite amongst some of our listeners, so they're probably interested in our thoughts on Boston. As discussed with Eva, the whole family, you know, we were all there, the two young apprentices, unaffiliated member of the household, unrelated to the Power Motion Picnic Hour. And we cheered on Eva. We said, yeah, go Eva. But we also just had a blast cheering on all the racers. Marcel Hug, the Silver Bullet. I mean, going up that hill, he must have been going 20 miles an hour. It was wild. Like, he was just on a different level than literally any other runner, any division on course. But then, like, it was almost like when, I'll probably mispronounce his name, but Cisse Lema was the first stand-up runner, sort of able-bodied runner. And I was almost like, is he just sort of like, I don't know, like on ski races, the guy that like sort of plows the course ahead of the other runners, because he was so far ahead of the rest of the pack.
Oh, yeah.
And he just chugged up that hill, too. And then like the rest of the crew came along, four or five, like saw Evans, you know, formerly attempted special guest Evans Chabet.
We'll get him.
We'll get him at some point. Possible future special guest Evans Chabet and some of the rest of the crew just in there. But you were saying, like, because you watched it on TV, and you were saying, like, it got a bit more interesting towards the end.
Well, yeah, Lema was so far ahead. But then that's because he was just running such a faster pace. But then at some point, probably in Brookline, he started to run a little slower. And all of a sudden, when they were going down, I don't know, maybe it was Beacon or, but before, I think it was before they even got to Kenmore Square, you could all of a sudden, you could see Evans, Chibet, and Career, who I think were second and third. You could see them, maybe like, I mean, it was, they were like 800 meters back or something. They were still pretty far, but they were closing. And it was a little bit too little too late. He'd pulled ahead by so much. It didn't matter. But it was kind of, it was fun watching that portion of the race. And at which point did you decide you could call it?
That was almost me at the community mile. I could have been Evans Chibet, where and you Lemma,
sort like of if you out, waited
out,
too
out
long
in front, out in front the whole time, and then all of a sudden there's just it's too far gone at that point.
Maybe I never saw behind me, but I have a feeling I wouldn't have sped up if you didn't catch me. And I did when you caught me, and I was able to, you blew by, and then I kept the comfortable same distance behind you. But Lemma, though, I think he gave it everything he had until he was running, you know, much slower miles the last 3 miles, but it didn't matter by then.
Yeah. And for the new listener sort of catching up on episodes, you'll be able to hear that story several other times throughout the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah. You know, that's going to come up again.
So, spoiler alert.
We do callbacks. I wanted to do an update from the Boston Marathon. Another favorite runner from this podcast, Zdeno Chara, former Boston Bruin.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He ran in 3:30:52.
Wow. Getting fast, or yeah. Is that a PR? Or I don't know.
I don't know if I have that information. But he raised a lot of money. He raised more than $25,000 for the Hoyt Foundation,
awesome,
and the Thomas E. Smith Foundation. And he's running another. It's in my notes. Say another major marathon next week. So does that mean London?
I don't know. Is London that close? I'm not sure.
I have no idea. But we'll go ahead and say London, and we'll correct it in the fact check if we need to.
I think you'd know better than I would. I guess I can maybe share one mailbag, because this is a follow-up from a live mailbag you might have gotten. But Susie Hot Rod was asking for advice on running. We had offered some off-the-cuff remarks and reached out to the listening community for any other thoughts, and I did get an entry back. Listener agreed with listener's coach friend, by the way, who has taught me everything I know about running. So this is right. This is direct. This is some direct coach friend advice. Elliptical for muscular development, because of the IT band issue, you can crank on the elliptical, not like, you know, slow, sort of not your sort of just like putzing along on the elliptical, but get going, get up so that you've got like a really good sweat going. And that's a good way to sort of get the muscular development without sort of the loading on the knees that will ultimately cause, like, you know, inflammation and stuff.
Okay.
Rolling the IT sort of rolling around the IT band to be avoided.
The thing that I suggested, don't do.
Yeah, that thing. Do rolling, just not on the IT band itself. Do it up around sort of the lower ab to hip area, interestingly. But that's how like all this stuff works in running, right? It's like, oh, like my ankle's hurting. It's like, oh, work your quad more.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So TFL would be the area if Susie's interested. Okay. And sort of the last bit is engage the glutes. And, you know, sort of if skating has helped over the years, sort of develop some strong glutes, like running, just really try to focus on sort of engaging those. And that will also help take the stress off other areas of leg and lower body.
Okay. Can't wait to get this information to her. If she's not listening, we'll make sure to follow up to make sure she gets it.
Yeah.
And she is embarking on her final season of roller derby, she announced.
Oh, so, wow.
So this will be her 20th and final season.
We'll have to maybe have her back some point for a very special return episode.
Agreed. One thing I did want to talk more about the Boston Marathon is, I think the women's race in the Boston Marathon was particularly compelling. And I don't know if a lot of us had the same experience watching, but it was a lot of deja vu, like last year, right? Like watching American Emma Bates lead for so long. Except I remember last year looking at who ended up eventual champion this year, and last year, Helen O'Beary. Mm-hmm. Seeing her last year for, I think, the first time and being like, there's no way, like with that, with that technique, she's going to be able to sustain. Because she seems like, and I kind of love this about her, but it seems like she's doing everything you're not supposed to do, which is she wastes so much motion, you know? She moves her head so much, she swings her arms so much. I mean, her experience is as a shorter distance track athlete. So maybe that's less of a problem. And it's, I guess it's not a problem in the marathon either. But the only difference was this year, I saw her doing that and I was like, yeah, she's going to win. Last year, I was like, she won't be able to keep that up. This year, I'm like, I know who's winning this thing. Sorry, Emma.
Well, she's a data point in the ongoing debate about sort of the psychological uplift of things versus the physical reality. Power up signs being an example, this being another one. People talk about airplane wings and sort of, you know, it's a something that in ultra running and trail running, when you're just getting like beat up and you're at your absolute worst, you should just like think about a physical expression of positivity, smile, do some airplane arms, just do some stuff that will, I mean, I definitely have like when I'm feeling my best on a run, I'll definitely like, you know, do a fist bump. If I'm listening to some music, I'll do arms up in the air, Rocky style. I'll do whatever I feel.
I like non-traditional technique. I always appreciated that as a kid when you'd see an athlete who did something that's technically incorrect. Cause then when someone would criticize me about my poor form in any sport, I would just point to whoever. And I'd be like, no, I do it like so-and-so, you know?
Yeah.
Like if somebody's like, you're sitting too far back on your skis, I'd be like, it worked for Bodie Miller.
I'm a self-taught bassist, so what do you expect?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know there was a correct way to play the bass, but I suppose in classical circles there are.
I forgo musical theory for just raw feel.
Yeah,
in this case, just like a running, and you do a windmill here and there. I mean, this is our type of running. I mean, and I think, you know, to bring it back, Eva, you know, expanded our minds and our perspective even further on running. And I think we even included marching band this episode too. So that was cool.
Finally, we worked marching band in it, and maybe we'll start doing callbacks to that as well. One more highlight for me, and I think this is important for us to call out on this show from this year's Boston Marathon, was third place in the women's division was Edna Kiplagat. A fortissimo runner. I think Edna Kiplagat is, I believe she's 43 years old or 44, but she's in the 40 through 44 age group and she came in third.
All right. We'll reach out to her.
Yeah.
She's unlikely to respond.
Current
much
world
like Uda, much like Uda Pipig, she might not respond to our request.
We'll reach out to Uda Pipig again. She was my favorite and all of our in the Boston area's favorite marathon runner in the 90s. I mean, the whole city simultaneously fell in love with her.
Yeah.
But as a show that we celebrate many things, but we sure do wave the flag of fortissimo running, and Edna Kiplagat is the current world champion fortissimo runner, I think.
That is amazing. Well, huge congratulations.
They were talking on the TV. Yes, this is something you miss being there live. It's exciting, but you don't get the facts. They were talking about the final three runners. O'Beary won last year. Sharon Lucchetti, who came in second, won the year before. And then they were like, Edna Kiplagat in third, like she won in like 2010 or something like that. Yeah. And so she's still out there and she was not far behind. I don't know. Yeah. She's a minute and a half behind or something, but like not, you know, she's ahead of everyone else.
Well, you didn't need to criticize my sort of observational format, but you know, we had fun too.
No, I was
a little slight on it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, oh well, you just didn't get the facts.
We call it, it was a backhanded podcasting compliment.
Don't you damn me with fate praise.
You guys are out there having a good time yucking it up, screaming with the Wellesley girls.
I mean, the youngest apprentice got to go in a fire truck, for Christ's sake.
What? Oh, yeah. I mean, for a young apprentice, that's better than winning the Boston Marathon.
I mean, I don't know if the Natick Fire Department technically sanctions this maneuver, but every year since, I don't know, 2000, 18, maybe, at least for several years until COVID, we would just roll up to the Natick Fire Department, roll through it from the back parking lot where there's always in a, you know, an accessible space, and then, you know, just be greeted by firefighters who are super nice and like, oh yeah, come on through. And like, you know, just post up by the hill there.
That's awesome.
That's their spot.
Yeah. That beats getting any kind of inside information. I mean,
That's soul watching.
Yeah. You can't top that.
Yeah. Out in the sun. Oof. No idea what's going on. Just
Who knows? Yeah, is that the race? Cool.
Just blissful ignorance.
Great, I love it. Yeah, we celebrate that here as well, I think. Okay, I want to switch to another marathon.
Oh wow! Okay,
this headline caught my eye: Virginian wins Jersey City Marathon, credits downtown bar for performance.
Wow!
Yeah,
is that like? Is that like when Larry Bird went to Chicago and they like got him drunk before like a playoff game and he like went lights out and then like sort of as he walked off the court, you know, saw the guy, like the equipment manager or whatever, and was like, thanks for the beers.
Yeah, basically, I have a quote. He said, this is his first time in Jersey City. He said he's a big fan. Quote, I love it. Last night I went to downtown. It's called The Worst Bar. WURST. I love that place. I got a sausage and a beer. I think that's what it was. It fueled me. So that's great.
Wow. Big shout out to The Worst Bar.
I've never been to The Worst Bar, although I have spent a lot of time in Jersey City.
Little play on, I'm going to say words, but I was trying to figure out if there was a way to say like worst.
And that play on worst. No, they got their thinking hats down down in Jersey City over by not too far from St. Peter's. My favorite recent college basketball team, the Peacocks. We all remember the run they made 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Or maybe we don't, but I...
Some of us do.
Some of us remember the St. Peter's Peacocks from Jersey City going on a Cinderella run. And what I loved about that, and this is, you know, running adjacent. There's a lot of running in basketball. At the end of that season, the coach... he got hired at Seton Hall and like every player transferred. And so I kind of went to check back into them next year and they were in the tournament again this year, I think, but
his hiring created a lot of running.
Yeah. Everybody ran.
Much more so than anyone in the play Rent.
Yes. But, which we now will mention every week. That doesn't involve running, but maybe they do a revival. Maybe it will next time.
Yeah, yeah. But I've got maybe one more. Oh, sorry, two more. Popular runner Jim Pergolese. number two, Zach Miller, who's a pro trail runner. Special guest Katie Scheid crewed him at UTMB this year.
Awesome.
Which I think I said Germany last episode. It's Italy, France, and Switzerland, of course, Mont Blanc. I mean, it was a bit of a misspoken statement there. Anyway, Zach Miller, pro runner, I think also on North Face with special guest Katie, and he is coming to the East Coast apparently, or at least he made reference to possibly coming to try a bunch of the sort of iconic FKTs out here. Okay. Ones that we often talk about on pod. So Hot Traverse, Presidential, Pemigewasset Loop, like all these, the ones that I often reference and you nod your head politely.
That's what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. So this will be something that we will watch. I will promise the listener that we will keep an eye on this and we'll report back at a later date.
I can't wait for the race recap on that one and the race recap on London and then the race recap on the ongoing week in running. Just
the week in running.
The greatest race.
The greatest race of all.
Yeah. And well, I guess all there is to say is until next time.
Onward.
Your favorite of the few, with a mile of
Special guest,
Eva Houston.
This is the Power Motion.